Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower, and we have another great show tonight dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and some science usually thrown in there. And tonight I thought we would talk about United States politics demystified. Because a lot of people are confused. They're confused about what's happening. They're wondering who are the people that really are running things and why they're doing and making the decisions they're making. And a number of other questions, you might say, are coming up. And I thought it would be good for me to maybe make some statements about that, hopefully. And excuse me. And also to invite any questions you might have or comments. You can call in. Of course, the numbers are right on the screen. For those of you who are listening in, and if you have another phone that you can get a hold of, you can try calling 877-876-5227 in the U.S. If we have some Canadians doing the same, 888-815-9756. And the rest of you throughout the world, well, you just have to call into the normal number of the radio station. That would be really complicated if you're listening on a phone to do that. I know a number of our listeners tonight and in the past month or two have been listening to the show over their phone, which is great. I love this, and it's a growing number of listeners, so that's terrific. Some people prefer that. They think they actually get clear audio, or they just like the freedom of moving about and being able to listen to the show instead of having to listen in front of a computer. So this is a good system, and so hopefully it will continue to be offered by this station. Also, we are going to the middle of the next hour, so we have a much longer extended show, which has been happening for the last couple months, and appreciate that too. So let me give you some ideas of what I'm talking about tonight, so that we can be fairly, I guess, on the same page about what I mean by demystified and the politics in the United States. Most people think that we have two political parties, and generally speaking, there's other ones, but they recognize those seem to be on the fringes usually. And those political parties are usually, you know, they're referred to as the Democrats and the Republicans. But the interesting part about this is that I don't really think that is the truth about today's politics, and maybe hasn't been for some time. Also, I want to try to reveal, which is part of demystification, the real causes of what I think are some crises that we are in at the present time and moving rapidly towards in the near future. The near future being 2 to 3 years from right now. I know that's a 2012 thing, but it certainly coincides in dates with what I think is about to take place. Now, let me give you some feedback on what I've heard and read so that you can kind of understand my positions and thoughts. First of all, I listen frequently to the Glenn Beck Show. Some of you already know that. And I think that Glenn Beck is a person, an individual, who is trying to find the truth. Sometimes he's a little off by his own admissions. And sometimes he exaggerates one part of, we'll say, an explanation and doesn't see a well-rounded issue. But most of the time, he, in my opinion, now this is my opinion, he offers a reasonable and logical explanation in his commentary. And one of the things I like about him is he allows people to indict themselves, explain themselves, or whatever they might be doing in their own words for the most part. I mean, he actually quotes them or gets them on a video clip, etc., saying something. Of course, you do have to be careful because sometimes these things could be out of context. But the majority of the time, he tries to get enough of the general statements so that they aren't out of context. At least they seem not to be. I've also been reading a number of books, including some by our president, President Obama, and books about him. And also, I've been reading books by analysts, you know, like Dick Morris, et cetera, who try to explain, in theory, what they think is happening. So they have their own, you might call it, demystifying process. So those are the things that I've been looking at. Now, I am a metaphysician, and I'm interested in the more, we'll say, spiritual side of things and the metaphysics behind things than just the question of politics. About 2 years ago, give or take a month or two, I came to the conclusion that the people that the president, then the candidate for president, candidate Obama, were hanging around with, along with himself, were basically socialists. I made this statement, and I further decided that, in my own mind, that they would be destructive and corrosive to both the economic system that we are familiar with, which is a free market capitalistic system, and that they would be destructive to some extent, if not significantly, to the freedoms enjoyed in our Constitution and some of the more important elements of what the United States stands for. And I also thought that he would diminish our standing as a leading nation in the world in deference to a kind of homogenized globalism in which instead of seeing the world as a group of individual states wanting or seeking to have an averaging of a one world kind of government. These things troubled me, but I also recognized there was a good chance that this was a guy who was going to possibly win against a relatively weak candidate in John McCain, who himself is a progressive type of Republican. Now, one of the things that I want to mention is the word progressive. If you listen at all to Glenn Beck, and some of you do, but not all of you, I'm sure, he uses the word progressive in a very derogatory way. To him, and he may be right about this, the progressives actually formulated most of the socialist doctrines that were adopted by both Nazi Germany and communist Russia, and then later communist Red China. And although, of course, they claim to be Marxist Engels philosophy people, the ones that ran those countries in terms of the last two, nonetheless, socialism itself seems to be founded predominantly on progressive ideas. Now, what are these ideas? Well, the very first thing that comes to mind as you look at this, because it's an outgrowth of, for those of you who don't know this, of Darwinian thinking. Darwinian thinking started to become extremely, we'll say, strong after 1860. And it took about 50 years or so for it to become a politically fused movement, which we now call, with somewhat with liberal people, but which we now call progressivism. And what it basically says is that there's no God. And this is not true of Darwin, by the way. Darwin was a very religious guy. But the people during the 50 years since he published, and remember, he published almost at his death because he was afraid of his very own ideas, labeling him as a heretic. But he basically was trying to find the truth about how we are able to develop as a species from prior species, etc. And he was trying to show that there is a connection of all life, which is a really great thing, in my opinion. The problem is that a lot of people say, well, if that's how it works, then there's no need for God. And especially people who are already pre-inclined to either be agnostic, which means they doubt God, or to be atheistic, which means they deny or proclaim the non-existence of God. This turns out to be a real problem, then, because they take Darwinian theory, which is very strong and accurate on its own level, and they then throw out God and start using these methods to create terrible effects. Everything from a planned, we'll call it, murdering, euthanasia, of people who are not perfect. We saw this in the Nazi movement. But that actually came out of progressivism. Progressivism started with people like Teddy Roosevelt. And so it was a strange thing that you would find some very intelligent people, and I'm talking about some of the, you know, professors and writers, et cetera, who over time came to the conclusion you didn't need God anymore. You know, all you needed was basically science and then people who were supposedly smart running things. And this is what the progressive movement really was, and unfortunately today is. Now, out of this kind of nonsense is a great truth, you might say, and that is that we have to be tested about God, and we have to find God beyond religion, because religion is antiquated in many respects, and it's formed by human beings. All religions are. And regardless of what they claim, you know, like, we got these scriptures from God. Well, you know, there is a God, but that God doesn't normally just give out scriptures. You know, even through the most enlightened of people, and I'm talking about religiously inclined people, they still don't have a direct connection with God. And so, I mean, and that's my opinion. Now, you may believe differently, but I'm telling you what I think. And so, what's going on here then is we have a lot of people running around at the turn of the last century, 1900, who were trying to convince people, as religious people usually do, that they knew God and they knew what God wanted. And then you have science very quickly moving ahead into an industrial age that was starting to even turn a little bit towards the more mental aspects of it, which is electronics and communications, both. And so the people who took up the cause of Darwinianism then started to reject God. Now, this is a test. The test is for all of us to be able to still sense God and move ahead in our thinking in science. There's no reason to reject God because you have a more scientific viewpoint than you had before because you've learned so much better how the universe actually or may actually function. There's no reason to reject God. The universe was created by God, and so is science. So why would you reject either? You wouldn't want to reject God. You wouldn't want to reject science. But unfortunately, this is the nature. The United States particularly is in this problem. There's something about the way we respond to two kinds of energy. One of them is called the six-ray energy, which is very, very focused and singular. So we have a singular viewpoint that we try to move towards. And then there's a second-ray nature to our soul, which is supposed to be open-minded and inclusive. We're in a battle. We're the prime example of a battle between these two kinds of ways of using energy in the universe. And we fight with ourselves. We fight within ourselves. And the fight has been going on in politics for a long time about whether we should have a society based upon God, or should we have a society based upon those who are smart and knowledgeable, and laws based upon science rather than what is good. Now, if we go back to the founders, and this is a favorite subject of Glenn Beck and some other people who follow him, we find that the founders were very balanced in this accord. They were profoundly godly people, but not necessarily as religious as some of their day. People talk about, you know, Ben Franklin. Oh, he's a Mason. And so were nine other people that signed the Declaration of Independence and also worked in the Continental Congress. Now, when you look at that, what does that mean? Well, the Masons were pretty much very godly, but not very religious. They believed in something called ageless wisdom, which I do too, by the way. But it wasn't a religion, per se. It was kind of like a way of understanding how the universe might work. It's cosmology and an ontology, but not necessarily a religion. And so these folks that created our society, created our original politic, were more balanced than probably anybody since their time. They were able to incorporate God and religion, and also make sure that no religion would be made into a public religion by keeping religion and politics separate. They didn't keep religion and politics separate to save politics from religion. They did it to save religion from politics. There's a very big difference in these two ways of thinking about this, but it's clear what their intention was. And so this is where we started from. We started from a really a good place. It doesn't mean that there weren't disagreements. If you can read the papers of Hamilton and Jefferson and others, you can see a lot of differences in the thinking about Hamilton wanted a very big government or stronger government. Jefferson wanted a weaker government because he was afraid of tyranny. But all of them were afraid of tyranny. They all came from a background of kings and monarchies trying to control everybody, and people who thought they knew better, understood better, were smarter, were better bred, had better genes. I mean, strangely, if you think about what is a king, I have better genes. It's sort of Darwinian, isn't it? So you know, these theories, these structured beliefs and the way they were carried out in the old world, Europe mostly, but also throughout the rest of the world, were antithetical to the United States, because the United States was a place to get rid of that. And so the founders of our country were pretty, we'll say, radical. By today's standards, they would be considered far right wing, almost libertarian, not quite, maybe. And they represent what a lot of people call the Tea Party today. And oddly, the Tea Party comes from them. They had the Boston Tea Party, to no taxation without representation. They threw $1 million worth of tea overboard, in today's money anyway, and refused to pay for the taxes on that tea. That was after England got rid of all the taxes, by the way, besides the tax on tea. So it shows that they were pretty strong in their structure and belief, because even though the English decided months before to eliminate all other taxes because they knew they were on the verge of losing the colonies, they still went and threw it overboard. Why? Well, because it was a representation of a future possibility of more tyranny. It wasn't because it was so terrible in itself. It was the one tax they left. If they had left no tax, maybe they wouldn't have been in the United States. Who knows? Okay, so when we look at that and we understand that, then what is the United States trying to exemplify. We have this ray nature, we'll call it, of being wanting to be singular in one direction, but be inclusive towards all. You could say that one way of looking at it is more Republican, the other way is more Democratic. But then you got this progressive people who are arrogant, tend to be arrogant, tend to be ungodly, although they may pretend by going to church or something. They don't go to a real church usually. They're when I say real, being a church that is involved with God as much as it is usually involved with politics or some kind of agenda. And so you have an issue that is being exposed through the politics of the United States. The United States is, in Angel's Wisdom terms, is a leading, if not the leading country. It is at least a leading, but most likely the leading country in the world. So the world's looking at us, like, give us an answer. And the answer is coming out of tremendous conflict. The reason it's coming out of conflict is because there's an energy change also going on right now. And that energy change is moving towards something called the fourth ray. The fourth ray is harmony through conflict. It tries to make things more spiritually balanced with the material world, especially when there's an imbalance. And it tends to create a beautiful world, provided that you can get through the harmony and through conflict part. The harmony through conflict, unfortunately, is happening. And it's going to really, really wind up in 2012. It's no coincidence that Barack Obama is president of the United States right now. I know I'm going all over the place, but that's okay. Hey, listen. I like a show that just kind of meanders. It gives you a lot of different things to think about. And Barack Obama, I read his parts of his biography and autobiography and other biographies of him that are similar to his autobiography. And, you know, he's basically a communist. That's basically who he is. He says he is. He says that through college, he used to go and drink, smoke cigarettes and smoke marijuana and sit around and converse with his communist friends about how the future would be much better with a communist United States and world, but the United States specifically. And he had wanted to be president since he was 5 years old. I'm just telling you what he said. This is not conjecture now. This is in his own words. And when he got out of college, he decided to apply his thoughts about communism. And he was a Marxist communist, which is the different kinds of communists, you know. But he believed more in the pure Marxist Engels philosophy of communism, which goes back to about 1848, 1850. So he wanted to apply this in some way that was practical within the other areas that he was having conflicts with in his life. He wanted to work these things out both on a personal level and in a way focused out towards the rest of society. And he found that the way to do this was through something called revolutionary political organizations that worked in the neighborhoods, you know, to try to get people to the point where they would rebel against some of the institutions that were both capitalistic and what he thought were abusatory, either racially or in some other fashion. So this is how he believed he wanted to exercise his life, and he did so. So his thoughts were to do this as he went through undergraduate and graduate school at Harvard, and then he went ahead and did it. He actually moved to Chicago and became a political activist and neighborhood organizer, got involved with the labor unions, and also got involved with some very, very radical people. As a matter of fact, you could say that some of the people he got involved with when he was at that age are now his advisors and his political operatives, both in and out of the White House and throughout the government. And I'm not talking about one or two. I'm talking about 20 or 30 or 40 or 50. That's a lot of people. And those are the people that presently he has chosen and gotten successfully to be either accepted by the Congress, or in some cases he's gotten around those laws by appointing them in areas that they don't have to be examined too closely. And a few of them have been thrown out because Glenn Beck has exposed them as being Marxist. Now, the interesting thing about Beck is he doesn't really call the president a communist, but the weird thing about it is the president calls himself a communist. So I don't see what the problem is. Why would anybody question whether or not Barack Obama is a Marxist communist when that's what he says? Well, you're not going to believe him. He must be a liar when he writes it in his own books. I wouldn't assume that that's not true. Oh, he suddenly changed in the last 6 months or a year. Is there any evidence of that? No, there isn't. So what is really happening? What is really going on then? Well, we have the test. The test is the president and his administration, along with the progressives in Congress, because there's a large number of Democrats that got elected as progressives at the same time, who are now applying their craft. What is their craft? Well, their craft is to try to take over the United States and change what is effectively a very good constitution into, we'll say, a more tyrannical, highly governmentalized type of constitution that basically they call a living instrument that shouldn't be used as it was originally written. And they're also, at the same time, using every opportunity to react to occurrences from, you name it, healthcare to what's going on in the Gulf right now, everything. And the failure of the automobile places and businesses and the banks, et cetera, to take over and to gain power and control. Because part of communism is socialism. Socialism is the control of the economic system by the government. Communism goes further than that. Communism is control of both the economic, the political, and the social systems. And they're doing all those things. It's something called social justice, which means that everybody is forced to live, think, and interact the same. Very anti-American, totally against all freedoms. And it's a total government. It's the way the government is basically the sole decider of everything that people are. And there's nothing hidden about this. This is the odd thing. Does the president oftentimes, when he is confronted with this lie? Yeah, he does. He lies because his thought process is, I already told you, stupid, that I am a communist, and I like mostly Marxist communism, and that I intend to fundamentally change the United States into a system which is consistent with my thoughts and beliefs. And those are my friends. And I put all my friends in the offices. So what is there that you are asking me a question about where I have to say, yeah, I'm really a tyrant in sheep's clothing, and if you don't like it, too bad. He doesn't say that. He lies when put under the gun under those circumstances, because he recognizes that most people don't understand what I'm telling you. And so he wrote all this stuff, and he said all this stuff at one time or another, but he's careful now to not say what it really all means. He won't say the conclusion. So Glenn Beck does sometimes. Not always, by the way. He's cautious, too. I guess he's a little afraid of Obama. Maybe I should be. Huh? But at any rate, you know, when you look at this situation, you start understanding that this is the test. This is it. If we survive the test, we have to get rid of these usurpers and go back to having a free system and understand that there's a balance between freedom and inclusiveness, between giving and love, and having people be creative and have a open purpose to what their life is about. The two have to be balanced. And we will have to find that balance by getting rid of corruption. Now, what has allowed the system to move in the direction it has is corruption. If we didn't have a corrupt government, Obama could not have been, and it isn't just a government, a corrupt society, Obama could not have been elected. Why? Well, because the people whose job it is to make sure we are informed about people who are trying to usurp authority and power and control, do so. And they're called the fourth, you know, the state, they're the press. But the press is corrupt. The corruption in the press is not just based upon money, but strangely, it's based upon a desire to have some of the progressive ideas inculcated into government because it allows the press to become a more powerful instrument in their own mind, but also extremely partial and lacking truth. So, you know, the standard news outlets tend to then go ahead and support crazy people like the ones that are running our present system, because the corruption allows them to have more power. They get to say and do things as long as it's within the context of what the politics are at the time, without much restriction. They get to do what they want, basically. And they make up the news instead of report it. It's usually a very bad thing. So if you make up the news rather than report it, that's how the news, that's how the fourth estate, it becomes corrupt. It makes up the news. Okay, and so there's our problem. And that's probably the main reason the corruption grew to such a large extent in the present system got into place is because there was virtually nobody reporting the truth. Some people say, well, what about Fox? You know, let me tell you something. Fox is not much better. Oh, they made some mention here and there about this or that. Most of what they said came after the fact. After the guy got elected and his crew got into office, then they start saying, oh, look at that. He's not in the center. He's a communist. Well, hey. That's a little late, like a year too late. Why didn't somebody just get up and read his book? You know? When Reverend Wright was the thing, some people said, well, how could he have sat in the pews for 20 years and not? You know, somebody should have said, well, of course he was sitting in the pews. And of course he was listening to Reverend Wright because he already said he's a communist. He already said it. He said that he and his friends got together and they did all this stuff, and Wright was probably there with him. So what's the big deal? Nobody had enough courage to do that. That's frightening. And why didn't Fox do it? Because they were already being pushed out, and they knew they had little access to a guy who seemed to be steamrolling towards the presidency. And instead of pissing him off, or his contender, who was, of course, John McCain, who was also a progressive. He's a soft progressive. So they said, well, there isn't that much difference between the two, so we'll just not say very nasty things, besides which we'll probably be accused of being racist, because this guy's a black guy. Boy, was that ever used, huh? And then when there was Hillary Clinton, well, she's a woman. So we have a sexist problem. How about just talking about the truth? That's what the news people are supposed to do, is report the truth so that we, as close as they can get, so that we can come to our own conclusions, right? Well, they didn't do that. And so that's how we ended up with where we are. Now, you can say, well, what about, what's the rest of the corruption? The rest of the corruption is there's guys like a guy named Soros and others who are also basically socialists, somewhat communistic. They have their own brand of communism, somewhat different. They're not Marxists. They're not like Obama's thinking. They're, some of them are Maoists. That's a more extreme and very serious problem. Some of them are different from that. Soros is not, is neither of those. He's actually a socialist, highly progressive, but with a, we'll call it, a bent towards globalism, if you understand what that means. So he's a globalistic communist, whatever that means. Globalistic communism. Wow, that's kind of a cool thing. Huh? All right, so, but these guys, Soros is a very wealthy guy. He's got billions of dollars. He started this thing called MoveOn.org, and he started other things about, he has a series of blog sites that report his version of the news. I mean, so basically the propagandists. And his use of his money for propaganda has been extremely effective in the last 2-3 years. I mean, he's become extremely active and effective. This is the problem we're facing. We are an example of the conflict of this world in a spiritual sense. God is a God, in my opinion, who seeks for all of life to be free first, and then to be inclusive and helpful second. People who are corrupt and progressive are neither. People who are progressive but not corrupt are more inclusive, but they are willing to give up an imbalance and have much less freedom. Most progressives today have become corrupt, but not all. John McCain, I touched on, is a progressive. I don't believe he's a corrupt guy. I think that he is a misguided person, but not corrupt. And so, in his mind, he's leading towards the more inclusive side of things, but he doesn't have a balance on the freedom side. Why? How do I know this? Because he's voted for some things in the past and willing to sacrifice freedoms for too much, for inclusiveness. And when we come back, I want to talk about what this all leads to and how economically the disasters we're facing are coming and what we can do to change it. I hope I've made some sense so far. This is a huge subject, and I've really kind of had to put it into sort of a footnote kind of presentation. But I'll try to round it out a little bit more when we come back, which will be in about, give or take, 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Thanks for those people who just called in. I hope you're still listening. Hi out there. Some of you may be bothered by some of the things I'm saying. That's okay. Or maybe you find it interesting. But please keep listening. I'm going to keep talking about it. All right, so let me go ahead and further some of what I was saying, try to explain it a little bit more, but also hopefully let's move towards the more positive direction of what we can do about all this, because we are being tested. That's my opinion now. What is the test? The test is, can we find the balance without corruption, and get rid of corruption, by the way? Can we find the balance of freedom and inclusiveness and love, and where we're having a purpose and at the same time being planning and giving in our ways of exercising our purpose? This is the combination of the first two parts of God's mind. It's what spirit is about. It's what being spiritual is about. Can we be spiritual is what I'm really saying. And this country moved very far towards materialism. And materialism allows corruption and promotes some of the most negative qualities of what some people call progressive movement. It makes people into machines and or seen as objects to a lot of people, especially those in power. And if we're going to make some changes, we have to make changes in ourselves before we are going to make changes in our government and the way the government's functioning. My suggestion is to listen to yourself and go inward. What are the things that you don't like about what's going on in terms of the government's role in your life? What are the things you do like? How is it that you think it would be best to change and move in a direction that's more positive? Now, I don't believe that revolution or violence is a means of appropriate change. But you should be aware that probably the majority of the people presently put into government by the president, not the ones that necessarily we elected, believe that. So that's a scary thing in itself. In other words, they're revolutionaries. And they believe that if they can't get things the way we meant it to be politically, which is through election and power coming from the people, that they'll take the power and they'll exercise force and violence on others, particularly if they're Maoist types of communists. And some of his administration have proclaimed themselves to be Maoists. Those are the ones that you got to be really scary and dangerous about. And also people who claim to be inspired by Stalin or Trotsky. I mean, you get, these are the kind of people who would say, well, the best thing to do is just go ahead and kill the people that we don't like. And Glenn Beck yesterday talked about a fellow who wrote a doctrine. He was the head of a movement called Storm. where they expected to kill at least 25 million Americans in camps in the next few years who didn't believe or couldn't follow their philosophy by forced education of some sort. That's very scary stuff, but that's what was done in Red China and sometimes in Russia during certain periods of time. So, I mean, you really, or the Soviet Union, I should say. So you really have to be aware of history to be concerned about what's going on right now. Okay, so what can we do? What are the expectations, at least I have, of what might happen? Well, we've got to find a center for ourselves. Some people call it the Tea Party and think that that might be it. I'm not so sure. The Tea Party is 100 different groups, maybe 1,000, who each are acting somewhat independently, and I don't think they have a single voice at this point. But nonetheless, they are moving in a direction that seems to be closer to where the founders were. And as I said, I think the founders had it pretty close to being right. They were spiritual disciples, almost the entire group of them. That means that they were very spiritual people, and we need to become more spiritual. Generally speaking, humanity needs to become more spiritual, and especially those people living in the United States. We got very materialistic. We have to become very spiritual. Becoming spiritual is difficult because you have to put spirit before money and form and power and control, personality kinds of things. So you put your personality on hold and you sort of move towards your soul. And that's what we need to be doing. Can we achieve this? Well, the crisis is going to force us to go somewhere. I'm going to tell you that. What is the crisis I see coming? Over the next several months, the polarization, I think, is going to become stronger. And the people who are progressive and who are revolutionary and the people who are seeking a lot more power and control are going to be threatened. In their threats, I think they will evoke certain levels of violence. We need to be careful about what that means. Just because someone is violent doesn't mean that necessarily we have to respond with violence back. We may have to use some level of force if there's police involved to prevent certain things from happening. But every opportunity that can will be used to try to seize power and control from the Internet, and that's already happening in case you're unaware of that, taking control over the Internet, not just taxing it. I know that that's some people are talking about that. I'm talking about something else where they're going to literally control what can be said or not said. And then also over news and even a program like this, all forms of communication will be countered by a new government agency that has been proposed by the president and will be signed into law by executive order, meaning that it's like a tyrant, he's like a king. And that will use about $30 billion, which was the suggested amount of money, to flood the airways, including the Internet, with propaganda, pro-government views. These are pro-communistic, progressive, communistic views, and anti-capitalism. The other thing we can expect is, in general, capitalism will decline. The president has taken every opportunity, along with all of his advisors, to destroy business, and especially small business, because the backbone of capitalism is small business. About 70-75% of all of the economic activity in a capitalistic free market society is small business, at least at the level the United States functions. And they're going to destroy almost all of that. They're doing it through taxation, regulation, and sometimes through, we'll say, even more devious means. But nonetheless, it's happening. I can tell you that because I'm involved in a number of businesses, and they're suffering tremendously through socialistic practices that are just incredible. And these have all come about in the last year or so. So as you get rid of a free market, you destroy the desire and will of people to initiate and be creative. And that's the first great part of existence. And they become easier to manage in puppets that you can control. Then you've got to put fear in them. And fear can come through laws that say that it's illegal to say or do something against the government. That's coming. So I expect all these things to take place in the next few months, not years. And I still expect that most of Congress will be voted out. Most of the progressives, the really radical people, will be voted out, except in some of the most radical states, like New York, maybe California, and a couple of other states that are stalwarts of socialistic kinds of thinking, and certainly are extremely liberal at the very least. But in general, there's going to be a lot of people thrown out of office. And then most of you are probably thinking, well, that'll solve everything. Well, you see, there's a problem. And the problem is that between the time that they're elected, or even prior to being elected, by October, the handwriting is going to be on the wall. So from October until the 1st of January, a whole bunch of new laws will be enacted that will give wide-ranging powers to the president and his administration. In order to prevent those laws from being exercised, including cap and trade, but it's going to be a really nasty cap and trade, you better believe it, he's going to destroy most of our economy and our social structure to some extent. And will enact very gruesome kinds of laws. Now, we do have a Supreme Court, and as long as those guys continue to live on that are still more reasonable members of it, we might be able to counter it that way. But unfortunately, well, the way I see it, the only way to change this is either to impeach the president and possibly vice president, putting in who will be a new Speaker of the House. It won't be Nancy Pelosi, because I think the House is going to flip from Democratic to Republican. Right now it's close. It's almost even. But I think by the end of the summer there'll be enough members that will be Republican. Now, some of these Republicans will not be real Republicans. They may be Libertarians or Tea Party people, whatever you want to call them. But at least they won't be progressive Democrats who are going to be supporting a tyrannical system. Okay, so anyway, what's going to take place is we're going to have enough people to enact whatever laws are necessary, but unfortunately the president can still veto them. And by his continued use of the veto, he will prevent Congress from changing anything back. So we're still going to have the same health care that got passed. We're going to have a lot of other stuff that got passed before these people on January 3rd or 4th or whatever it is took office, all the stuff will be done. And you might say, well, that's insane. He'll never be reelected. Well, you know, if the president really wanted to be reelected, and if that was his only aim in life and existence, he wouldn't be ruling from his present position, would he? So I don't think that he's too worried about being reelected. I think his thought process is once again, all these laws into effect, he might just take over the country. And if he doesn't take over the country in some illegal fashion, he'll change the Constitution. Because he's got a couple more years. All he takes one or two more members of the Supreme Court, and he can start doing all kinds of unconstitutional things and get away with almost anything. That would be complete usurpation and takeover of the country. Now, I haven't read it yet, but supposedly Glenn Beck wrote a novel about this. Interested in reading that. And it may have something similar to say about what I just said. Maybe he thought of all this. I don't know if he did. I think it's called the Overton or something like that window. But at any rate, so we have a great deal of danger. Because what I just said is the political system is not going to save us. I don't think we can pull it out. we would have to get a two-thirds majority in Congress that reverses a lot of stuff that's still coming down the pike and what has already happened. I don't think it's going to happen. So what's the final outcome? Well, the United States is going to go bankrupt. We're going to have a complete economic collapse. It'll start happening in August. And it's going to progress for about a year to 2 years. And by the end of that time, the dollar is going to fail. And we're going to be in such a poor condition that the president and his crew will be able to do almost anything they want. And almost all revolutions require the destruction of a nation's economy to be successful. I refer you to history. There has never been a time that a revolution has ever succeeded when there hasn't been, coinciding with it, an economic failure. So that's the requirement. So don't be surprised that the president keeps making choices along with his administration that are destructive to our economy. And of course, he has at the present time, he has a Congress under his control doing what he wants them to. Everybody thought it was opposite. The Congress was controlling and he wasn't, but that's not true at all. So be aware of that. Be aware that the solution is going to require something that goes beyond government, because the government doesn't seem to... I mean, the founders made a great system, but I don't think they intended or thought that over time, over a couple hundred years, we would lose so much of the Constitution and there would be such an onslaught onto our rights and freedoms. Maybe they did, because Ben Franklin is reported as saying, well, we made a great system, but now it's up to you to make sure that you keep it, because otherwise you're going to go back to tyranny. And I think that's pretty much a true statement. How do we get out of this? What are we going to do to really make a change? Because our Constitution and the political system we're in may not permit us to solve the problems that we're having. Okay, the first thing to realize is that this is a test of our spirituality. So we need to become more spiritual as a nation. And we need to recognize some of the things that I teach on this program. I mean, I'm not saying you got to listen to me. I think you got to listen to your heart and mind and to your soul. That's who you got to listen to, and to God, basically, through those vehicles. And you got to find a place in yourself where you're stronger than the material side of things. Because remember, we're headed for an economic catastrophe. So, and I don't think there's any way out of that. I mean, the only way out of it is if, you know, you just wiped out the present administration and immediately enacted things that were pro-small business and it's opened up the economy and, you know, and got money moving again and credit and stopped the government spending by about two-thirds of what we're spending right now and did a whole bunch of stuff. You did all those things, yeah, you could correct it, but that's not going to happen. So how do we correct it? Well, the first thing is to not be as concerned in your own life about material issues as you are about spiritual ones, so that you have the courage to face an economic collapse without running to the government and giving up all of your remaining freedoms and power to a bunch of corrupt, tyrannical Marxist communists, or communists in general. You got, and socialists, we'll call them. You got to give up basically the need to have things as they seemingly have been, and instead be focused on speaking the truth and hearing the truth and working together with other people to build a more spiritual society. What's going to happen then is that when the full weight of the problems that we're facing come to bear on us, we have the strength to resist the easy and wrong answers. And we continue to vote out the people that have created the problem. Because if we don't vote them out in the next election, I mean the one after November, we'll never do it. That'll be the end. And we will have failed the test. And it's one heck of a test to fail. Because the United States is the leading country. We are the country that everybody looks to extol freedom. And if we give it up, no one else is going to take up the banner. Not in this world. It may be the end of the entire planet. Maybe a big rock will come and finish us off or some other kind of catastrophe. But really, we become worthless as we turn towards darkness. So we have got to work on ourselves and become unified as both a country and then help other countries to do the same, because the whole world's following us in this failed system. And we need to simultaneously try to preserve as much as we can of both a free economy and a free way of thinking and a free way of educating ourselves. Remember, the educational system was recently taken over by the government. They took over all of the student loans. Who's ever heard of such a crazy thing? So you can't go to school. You won't be able to get an education unless you get the kind of education they want. We may have to educate ourselves outside, start new kinds of schools, free schools. Talk about universities where people learn all kinds of ways of thinking and where they can explore real issues of truth. These may have to be done cooperatively and freely by those who can teach, and done so without much, if any, money being exchanged, because there won't be much. This is part of a system that moves towards spirit and away from materialism, away from what I call the third ray, and more towards the fourth. Now, I want to give you a little break, and I just want to tell you about some other things that I'm interested in. Recently, we've become, we being the spiritual group I'm a member of, involved in pursuing corruption on a more local level in Arizona. For those of you who want to know more about this, give us a call. We're about to file some very important actions in federal court against some very, very evil people who have high positions in government. They know what's coming, so I don't have to worry about saying it now on the air. They don't know it officially, but they know it in their gut. Yeah, we're after you, and we're going to get you. Okay, I just want you to know that in case you would like to be of some help, you can give us a call, write us an email, or whatever. Some of you have already done that, and we're putting together a team of people to be of help in this. I want to mention something else. Ideal Cell Sorption Resveratrol. This is a product that really is great. It has tremendous values. And one of them is it can help you live longer. Something else that might be important to know, which I've been keeping secret, but I'm not any longer, is that if you use it, you may need less calories per day. So it may save your life if there's a lack of food. Even less protein in some circumstances, but certainly less calories. And so that's something I'm telling you that we've discovered, and you may want to be checking into that. There's only vague references to this possibility in some literature. You can't lose weight by taking it. I'm not telling you that. But you can, remember, you could gain weight if you just eat yourself to death. But it's good to be using it from the standpoint it really gives you the strength to deal with things. And you may have to eat less food, which is a good thing. It's great to use it with your animals, your pets. There's a VF formula, veterinary formula. And both of these are extremely effective. You can get it at foreveryoungproducts.com, 800-777-7850. check with them. Also, you should have a bottle or two of Soul Balance. This stuff can save your life. It redistributes negative energies and centers from various diseases and from autoimmune issues and a lot of other factors. And using this stuff literally can be life-saving. For more information, you can call 602-472-5127 and find out more about it. From Life Balance Association. Also, we're going to be coming out with a new formula that I've worked on that deals with pain, all kinds of pain, and can virtually eliminate pain with no side effects. It's not narcotic. It's not a drug. But it works amazingly well. And I'm just mentioning it to you. We may have it available in as soon as a month from now. And it's a great substance. We don't even have a name for it yet, although I think it's going to be called Freedom from Pain. Just Freedom from Pain, I think that's what we may call it, although we haven't conclusively come up with that, but I think that's what we're going to be doing. If you're having problems with your financing, especially of your home, call Nova Home Loans if you're in Phoenix or in Arizona. And even if you're not, but you don't know who else to call, call Kavita and at Nova Home Loans. She's offering green loans for energy efficiency as well as refinance and new types of loan ways to deal with people who are underwater. She'll help you find some solution, usually. And if you've tried other places, give her a call and see if she can be of some help. If you need green solutions, that involves another company that I have some association with, Alternative Energy Approaches, especially in Arizona. We can, because that's where we're licensed, we can save huge amounts of energy and money, more than it costs for the loans necessary. And we can get you the money. That's not the problem. So we can get you a loan in most cases. And change your environment, be it business, commercial, industrial, or your home, to the point where you save more energy and the cost of it than it costs per month for the limited period of time to pay off the cost of changing the conservation values in the house. The result we call futurebation. And the results are, after a number of years, you stop making payments because you paid off, and you keep earning money. And at a minimum, you at least break even, and that's the truth. So it never costs you anything. Think about that. It doesn't cost you anything, and you save energy, or you actually usually save money. Amazing. Okay, we're back to what we can do. What more can we do to solve our problems? Well, I gave you some of the thoughts I had about what we're expecting. Now, during an economic collapse, some of the things to be concerned about are food, shelter, and clothing. Obviously, I don't expect people to just be some kind of spiritual being and not have a corporal existence that they have to support as well. So I'm not telling all of you to forget about the material world unless you're planning on dying in the next 6 months or so, or year. That being the case, you need to have at your disposal food and water and enough resources. I'm talking about physical resources. I'm not talking about money, because money may become worthless. Physical resources and the means of keeping those resources so that you can exist for possibly years, only being able to support yourself at maybe a 30 or 40 or 50% level and making up for the difference with what food, water, and other material things you've saved. Now, I'm not saying to go completely crazy on this. I don't expect you to basically go into a cave and live there for the rest of the days. But try to do this within your household. Also plan on the possibility there may be a nuclear exchange. Have some potassium iodide around if you haven't found out about that. It's a few dollars, but it's be impossible to buy. It once something bad happens and there's a tremendous amount of fallout, say, be aware there could be all kinds of crazy military and violent actions that could take place. If you know how to and you can, in the place that you live, have a gun, get one. Why not? But also be careful that your children don't get to it. And you have to be responsible, learn how to use it, that kind of thing. Why have one? Well, because the government's going to, first of all, try to take them all away from us within the next year. But besides that, be aware that the police aren't going to be of much help. In any kind of catastrophe, they're good for a maximum of about 7 days. After 7 days, their own families, their own problems take place, precedent, and be it a epidemic or a military problem, whatever, they're gone. And so then you're on your own. You're going to have to protect yourself to some extent. Yeah, that doesn't mean that you have to have a whole arsenal of everything in the world and, you know, and get yourself some kind of military kind of equipment. No. I'm talking about the basics here. Basics may not always work, but they're better than nothing. And these are the kinds of things you should be thinking about. Now, some people say, what about getting gold or silver? Well, it kind of like fouls somewhat the dollar. And it's when the dollar really starts going down in value, it's better to have gold or silver because it probably will retain its value. But at the present time, I don't think that's happening. The dollar isn't due to decline in my mind till next year. I think what's really going to happen for right now is we're going to have high unemployment. You're going to see in August unemployment's going to jump up to like 11, 11.5, 12%. And we're going to have underemployment at even a higher level, with a lot of people who used to be making double, triple what they're going to be making in September in a pretty nasty place. It's going to be difficult for them to maintain any kind of standard of living. It's best to try to buy some of the things that I'm talking about now, because they'll become more rare to get in the future, and you may not have the financial ability to buy them. Like now, it might cost you 5% of your income, whereas maybe in 6 months it'll be 50% of your income. You won't be able to afford it. Be aware that these are all kinds of problems that we may be facing. If you live in a city, it's going to be more difficult because services will be cut off or reduced. This will come because of shortages first, but possibly later on because of human crises of various natures, from pestilence and diseases to violence, possibly. So all the things that I'm saying, we should be prepared for, but hope that we never have to use them. Just think about it. Wouldn't it be wonderful 2 years from now, you don't use all the foods you have, and everything's going a lot better, and you can give it all to the poor or other people who need it more? That'd be a great, great outcome. Let's hope we can get there. What else can we do? Well, probably join a political party. Maybe the Tea Party. I don't know. I don't think the Republicans or Democrats are working in the right direction. But you need to find that system where you can express yourself in exactly the way you want to, and you can vote for people that are going to make sense for you, and people that you can actually get elected to. I mean, it doesn't make much sense just to vote for someone as a protest. It does make sense to vote for someone who maybe has somewhat of a chance, maybe less than you would hope, and maybe the next time they'll get elected. Although we don't have a lot of time on elections. And remember what I said. Even if we got a fairly large majority of more founders' level of thinking, whatever party you want to call that, in Congress, it won't be enough to change the course of events as far as this administration is concerned. They're destroyers. Obama is a destroyer. He's here to destroy. He's not here to destroy because he woke up one day and said, I just want to destroy things. He's here because he believes, in his own heart and mind, that capitalism, the free market, our constitution as we have it in the present day, and people in general, the public in general, are all incompetent, useless, and bad for everyone. He believes that. And he further believes that he knows better. He's arrogant. He is even hostile, but he hides it. He has a real good smile. He started practicing that smile when he was 5 years old, so he's very good at it, because when he was 5 years old, he decided he wanted to be president, and he had to look presidential. I'm not kidding you. These are his own words. So he's very good at this stuff, better than any politician we've seen in a long time. But he's not just a politician, he's an ideologue. And he's a tyrant. Be aware of that. Because if you don't think of him in all of these ways that I'm suggesting, you'll get fooled. Because after all, he is very good at lying. As a matter of fact, pathologically, he's probably a better liar than almost any president we've ever had. Just think about that. So here he is, an ideologue and an extremely good liar. That's pretty good. Also, he's a black man, at least partially black. And the point is that gives him a leg up. Because if you don't like him, he calls you a racist. He couldn't be better. Couldn't be better. He's also an anti-Semite, which is most interesting. Because he got 78% of the Jewish vote last time around. If you happen to be Jewish, you better be looking real close at this guy. Most likely you voted for him, and you voted for him at a higher level than anyone else in the country except for black people. And yet, this guy is so anti-Israel and anti-Jewish that it's scary. It's absolutely frightening. Now, I'm not saying that everything that Israel does is perfect. But they are the only real functional democracy in the Middle East. And if we lose them, and we're going to probably lose them, by the way, I'll cover that, I guess that's the last thing. If we lose them as a force in that part of the world, we are gaining huge numbers of increases in our enemies, specifically the radical jihadists, and those folks are really aiming to kill us. Now, let me explain something. We can lose Israel without them falling apart as a country. They just don't hold any weight in terms of their military strength. And the way that he's doing that, he's emasculating them. He's taking them apart piece by piece. He and his administration, I'm talking about Obama now, taking them apart piece by piece and setting them up so that if they attack Iran, which they're almost certainly going to have to do, they'll be ostracized and condemned. If they don't attack Iran, Iran will attack them and destroy them. Either way, they're finished. You see where we're headed. He's a destroyer. Now, he's a destroyer with a purpose. His purpose is to bring us to a new level of spirituality. He's not here by accident. And actually, I believe his soul originates from another planet entirely. He's a very strange guy. But he's the perfect storm for a very unfortunate and serious time. The history books are going to have one heck of a lot to say about right now. if there ever is or will be a history book written 20 or 30 years from now, because who knows what's going to be left of this planet if we all fail. I'm hoping that we don't. And if you try to and you get into a party or a political system that you believe represents to yourself the truth, be aware of the things that I've discussed with you. Maybe you can find ways of helping to support countries like Israel and fight countries like North Korea, Red China, Iran, and a half a dozen more from Cuba to Venezuela. I mean, you've got to really understand that there is a system out there that is looming right on the edge of abyss, of darkness. This is a conglomeration. It is a perfect storm of evil and destruction moving our way. And we're sitting. It's almost like the United States was in 1939. Yeah, everybody said, oh, we've got two oceans separating us and all. Yeah, we came very close to be taken over both internally and externally by Nazism, which is no different. It's a socialism. It's another kind of socialism. It's just a way of, it's almost like they dot their I's in a different way and cross their T's, but basically they're the same thing. It's tyranny. And it's tyranny by destruction of economy, through physical force, through personal freedoms, through reduction and eventually demise of personal freedoms and social structure. And of course, the ultimate goal is to destroy God. So ultimately, the only way I see of solving this problem is by all of us exclaiming in our life that God is, and God is, and you just finish the statement with everything you can imagine that's good, and that it's right, and that it's proper. And you make this part of your everyday. We all need to be talking to each other about what's going on. If you think any of the parts of this show, or any of the parts of other shows, including Glenn Beck, or anything you've read by, you know, any of the political writers make any sense to you, you should be telling other people about it. Go out and talk to them. Let them know that you think this way. Because a lot of people are thinking this way, but they're afraid to talk about it because they're afraid they'll be ostracized. Other people will think they're radicals or crazy people. Maybe they're afraid of the government, because the government's trying to make people afraid of it. Remember that they're not trying to convince us that they're nice people. They want us to be afraid of them. Ultimately, revolutionaries seek that as an answer to their position of real weakness. God is the answer. Understanding what God is probably the biggest and most important job each of us has. We've got two senses, our heart and crown chakra, if they're fully functional, or at least partly functional, that tell us what God is and how to co-create and create more of God. Use those senses. Read spiritual books. Read books, some that I've written and others. Use those as sources to be applied in your daily life. You'll gain strength from that, and from that strength, you'll be able to weather the storm that is ahead of us. It's quite a storm coming. Now, am I saying this because I'm a doom and gloomer? No. I'm saying this because the handwriting is more than on the wall. It's becoming tattooed to our foreheads. And it's in reverse, so when you look in the mirror, you can see it. I mean, it's like everywhere. You can't miss it. What's frightening about what's happening is how obvious it is, not how hidden it is. Yeah, he's a great liar. The president is a great liar. And so are a few people that work for him. But the point is that he's also told the truth. So just look at the things that he said that I call the truth. And when he lies about it, just say, why, that guy's a great liar. He said this 3 months ago. He said that 5 months ago. I read about this a year ago. And now he's lying. It's really interesting. Now, he changes the story based upon what he considers to be his political needs at the moment. You might say, well, how does he have any conscience? I don't think he does. I think his conscience is his ideology. An ideologue doesn't hear their soul. They hear their own arrogance and egotism. And that of those that think and feel the same as themselves. They live in a bubble. The bubble is almost unbreakable. And so don't expect that sometime this guy's going to suddenly wake up and have an epiphany and say, whoa, oh, I could have been, I should have been telling everybody that I'm really this tyrant who wants to do all this stuff and that I'm really interested in control and power. And then I think they're a bunch of stupid people who cling to their guns and their Bibles, and they're really ignorant son of a bitches. Oh, wait a second. You know what? He actually said that. I'm paraphrasing, but he actually said that. He said that before he was elected. Were you listening? Are you listening now? Yeah, now I'm not saying the Bible is an answer for everything, by the way. But those people who follow it at least are looking for God and not for some control and power over others, for the most part. Some people use the Bible to control other people. Those people are really deluded. But, you know, hey, I meet them on occasion. That's okay. But that, for the most part, people who are interested in the Christian Bible, or it could be another Bible. You know, it could be the Quran. A lot of people say, well, the Quran says jihad and this and that. Well, the Quran is one of the most contradictory books you ever read. One page it says, yeah, one should enlist violence on those who are out to destroy, Muhammad and God. But on the other side, you know, we talk about peace and love and all the other stuff. And, you know, so it's a kind of a mixed bag. Anyway, I hope this show has made some difference. I've been all over the map because this is a large topic to try to cover in, like, the time we've had. Hopefully, today, now, you have something to think about, something you can do something about. If you want, contact us. We are available to talk to you more about what can be done. We're available to work together with others who are already doing this. If you have a group, political or otherwise, give us a call. We're very interested in what everybody's doing, honestly. And you'll have an open ear. You'll have open-minded people who are trying to do good in the world, trying to make a difference, trying to make this a better place and do all the things that we think are the right things to do. Okay, I'm out of time for right now. And, somebody's giving me something. No? They're giving me something. Okay, yeah. I'm supposed to give you email places. thoughts@whylifeis.com. That was the paper I was looking for. And the website is www.ageswisdom.com. So you could get us through that. And if you want to email, thoughts@whylifeis.com. We're out of time for right now, and until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.